This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
12:03. When did Dominic Raab go on his holiday? That could be that could be a question this week on Mystery Hour. Although I might be getting a round of applause myself, judging by my astonishing response to me asking that question earlier, despite his attempts to refuse to answer it in the House of Commons. Don't be a clever clogs. Don't ring in and ask that question. You won't get on air, and you won't get a lollipop. All right, this is Mystery Hour, your weekly opportunity to achieve the sort of satisfaction not ordinarily available anywhere on your radio dial. If you have a mystery, a question in search of an answer, ring me. Ring in 0345 6060 973. I'm already glancing at my screen. Three people had texted in, when did Dominic Raab go on holiday, before I just did that weak little comic routine about not ringing in to ask me when Dominic Raab actually went on holiday. Oh, I've done it now. I've ruined the top of the show as well by talking about stationery and compasses when I should have been talking about school, and now I've ruined Mystery Hour by talking about Dominic Raab. Oh, I'm sorry. Helen's in Linlithgow in Scotland. Helen, question or answer?
It is a question.
Carry on.
Right, so my husband
Don't you dare ask me when Dominic Raab went on holiday. There will be...
I wouldn't dare. Not the first question.
No, good.
Right, so my husband and I were watching Married at First Sight last night.
Oh, yes.
The Australian version.
Yes.
And there was a brother who, off one of the brides-to-be, who looked like he was about to object to the wedding when the ceremony was taking place. And I want to know what actually happens when someone objects at a wedding.
Oh, that's a good
one. Is there an official procedure? Like, obviously you've got objections of the heart, like maybe someone in the congregation.
Well, that wouldn't count. You'd have to have reasons.
It would have to be a legal reason.
So you'd have to say, I'm already married to her. That would be a legal... That's my wife up there. How dare...
Exactly, but I want to know what actually happens. You know, like,
does the priest check?
In the room.
What is the legal procedure is what we want to know.
Yeah.
Oh, what a great question.
I can't really take full credit. I think my husband actually kind of... It was part of a discussion we were having last night, so I'll give him a little bit of credit.
If it was the other way around, he wouldn't be doing that, would he?
Of course he wouldn't.
No, he'd be banking it all, filling his boots with all the praise, all the approbation. I love that. Well, so we'd probably need a vicar, don't we, or a priest to tell us that.
Some sort of efficient, maybe even civil ceremony type thing, or someone who's been at a wedding.
Well, I can't do it. That would be a good phone-in, wouldn't it, if we didn't have to concern ourselves. Have you ever witnessed that? If any person here present knows of any legal impediment, is it? Or am I getting my bits mixed up? Anyway, it doesn't matter. What happens? What's the rules? I like it. I like it a lot. He didn't do it, though, I sense, in the programme you were watching.
They were teasing it. There was a hand being raised. It was halfway up. And, he was just... There was a lot of talk going on, a lot of kind of jeering in the background.
There you go. One of my daughters is a big fan of that show. I've thus far resisted its charms. 6 minutes after 12 is the time. James is in Wandsworth. James, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on.
Well, I know that a US president can't be elected for more than two terms, but what I wanted to know is, can a president be a vice president after he's fulfilled his two terms?
That's a nice question as well, isn't it? I saw Hamilton last night. Are you familiar with Hamilton, James, the musical?
Yes, I am, but I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, I really recommend it. But, I mean, there's quite a lot of... I love things that smuggle in knowledge, you know. So the interplay between Alexander Hamilton and Thomas Jefferson and James Madison and George Washington and even... The people who didn't... I mean, Hamilton didn't become president, but the other three did. It's all there now in my memory banks. And it wouldn't have been if I hadn't watched a musical, which is... I love it when that happens. You get to do you accrue the knowledge without having to do the intellectual heavy lifting.
Yes, I really want to go and see it.
Oh, it's wonderful. It's very good on Disney Plus. I shall find out for you. Can a former president run as a vice president? I wouldn't have thought so for the very simple reason that, of course, if the president were to perish, the vice president would become president, and you're not allowed to do more than two terms. So if you've done two terms, I don't know. So, I mean, we'll hopefully find out. And what happens? What is the legal procedure if you object to a wedding while it is underway? You're all familiar with the point. I probably shouldn't have said vicar or priest. Quite right. It could have been a civil ceremony. But what happens if someone goes, I've got a blooming problem with this blooming wedding. Over here, quick. 8 minutes after 12 is the time. Elliot is in Solihull. Elliot, question or answer?
Question, James.
Carry on.
what are the origins of head lice or nits? And I say this because a few friends of mine have children who are going back to or going to school.
Yeah.
And we've been discussing kind of things about our school days. And one of them seems to be, there always seems to be some kind of outbreak in schools of head lice, but they happen everywhere but come from nowhere, if that makes sense.
Well, what you mean? Where did the first louse come? Where did the first nit come from?
How do schools get them? I know they obviously passed by sort of contact on the head and stuff and that, but they're all over the country. But how do you not make them extinct? How are they always around? Does that make sense?
But that's not a criticism. It's probably me being a bit slow on the uptake because I can sense in your mind this question is crystal clear. It's just between the mind and the mouth, it's losing some of its clarity for me.
That wouldn't be unknown.
I make a living out of it, Elliot, so I'm hardly in a position to criticise you. Am I? So, try again.
So nits occur in a school. There's a point in which a school has no nits or head lice, and then they have nits or head lice.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, these get picked up from other children elsewhere because usually it's children, I think, who are the ones who pass them on, but. You can't ever trace them back to being at any one point. So
you can. I mean, you can have. You can trace the first case in school.
But where? How did they get that?
Well, they got it from someone else, not in school.
But this, I think in my mind, but like how did you? Someone gets it, and then someone gets it.
So you, if nits were a Russian doll, you're looking for the smallest Russian doll.
I am exactly that. Yes.
I mean, good luck to you. I can't quite imagine.
I'm aware, I get they've always been around, but I guess in my mind, I'm trying to think everything has to have started from somewhere.
Yeah.
So when was that? How did lice suddenly appear and now they're all of a sudden in school, predominantly always around?
They'll be breeding a lot, won't they? I mean, is that part of the answer? They obviously breed at a rate of knots. Because nits are eggs.
I've seen myself in knots around this, James.
Yeah, you and me both. Nits are the eggs, aren't they?
Everyone looks at me and says the same thing in the same school as you do, going,
I admire your pluck. So everyone you've ever asked this question to greets you with perhaps even less polite confusion that I've managed to deploy, and yet you still thought I'll ring up a radio station and ask this question in front of the whole world.
It's exactly that.
I love your style.
I'll get the full dressing down the road, and maybe someone will come forward with something that I can take away and put this to bed with, but that's why I've come to you.
If that happens, Elliot, I'll give you the money myself. It is 11 minutes after 12. Where do nits come from? That's what I got from that. I don't know if anybody wants to finesse the question further. Can a former president run as vice president? And I wonder if there's two answers to that. One being yes, if he's only served for one term. No, if he's served for two. That would be my theory. I do have an A-level in comparative US-UK politics, but it was a very, very long time ago. And what is the legal procedure if you object to a wedding in the middle of said wedding? Patrick's in Croxley Green in Hertfordshire. Patrick, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on.
I'm fitting a kitchen for someone at the moment, and whilst doing it, I noticed a gas leak, so I rang the emergency services and fixed it straight away.
Yes. Hang on a minute. I feel like Columbo. You're fitting a kitchen and you noticed a gas leak.
Literally nothing to do with me at all.
Oh, right, so it just happened to be fitting a kitchen, Governor.
No, I promise you, otherwise I wouldn't have rung in.
What? Rung me. You still would have rung the gas board, or whatever they're called these days. Go on, what's the question?
I'm just wondering, obviously, when you see it on the everywhere with the sticker, it says, if you smell gas, call this number. I'm just wondering, has there been a reduction in emergency gas call-outs since COVID?
Stupid question. Because people lost their sense of smell. Well, we shouldn't laugh, because probably there might have been some tragedies where people didn't notice a gas leak because of a sense of smell. But you wouldn't, even if there had been a reduction in the number of calls to the emergency lines, you wouldn't be able to prove that that was a result of people having lost their sense of smell, would you?
Well, I'm assuming that the emergency services have got enough people to cover an average over X amount of years.
Yeah, but even if the average has gone down, they wouldn't be able to prove that that was linked to smell. Is it it's not osmosis, it's osmomia.
Anosmia.
Anosmia, well played. Yeah, bless you.
Thank you. well, maybe, you're probably right, but I was,
It's on the board. Someone listening from a big energy company, if they've forgiven us for our Extinction Rebellion coverage, might be able to provide an answer to the question. So, anosmia is a great word, isn't it? Do we think or can we prove that anosmia contributed to a reduction in the number of calls to the emergency gas leak line?
That's the one. Thank you.
What's happening this week? What a brilliant bunch of questions. 13 minutes after 12. Liam's in Bath. Liam, question or answer?
Hello, James.
Hello, Liam.
What it is, just to give you some context. So I've got a long history of buying chicken nuggets.
Okay.
I'm not sure whether I should name where I buy them from, but...
Well, have you... I mean, do you mean you buy them from a restaurant or you cook them yourself or you do...
It's a fast food restaurant.
Okay.
There's not many drive-thrus in the UK.
Yeah, I don't know where people get this. It must have been something in childhood where people thought they're not allowed to mention. I think it's the BBC. If you mention a brand name on the BBC, you then have to say other drive-thrus are available or something like that because it can be undue prominence. But no, you can say Wimpy. That's absolutely fine.
Yeah, so McDonald's, yeah. So I was buying some McDonald's chicken nuggets.
Yeah.
And for a long time, I've just microwaved them to heat them up, you know, when you've got some left over, which I thought was fine, really. They're a bit soggy, though.
Yes.
It's quite unpleasant. I don't know if you've ever eaten a soggy chicken nugget, have you?
I've never eaten a microwaved chicken nugget, no. But, you know, I'm only 49.
But they're unpleasant. So, I was with my girlfriend and she said, why don't you put them in the oven?
Oh, yeah. So, she's a keeper.
I went and put them in. So I was like, why? And she said, it's trust me, just trust me on this. It's much better to put them in the oven. So I did. And, they come out, you know, almost brand new. You know, it's almost as if they'd just come out the fryer. You know, they're great. So I just wondered what the reason for that is. Is there some sort of physiochemical reason?
Yeah, well, no, physics, really, I think, more than chemistry. The microwave cooks or heats from... look, the best way of explaining it, because I don't really understand how microwaves work, is that heats up from the inside, doesn't it? And so if it's heating up from the inside, you're not going to get... It's not hot. When you put your hand in the microwave after it's finished cooking, it's not hot. So you're heating up the chicken, whereas in the oven you're heating up the crispy crumb as well.
Okay, so what happens to the water? It just evaporates.
But it's only the water stays in the chicken. The water that's made your nugget soggy has come from inside the nugget, and when you cook it in an oven, it stays inside the nugget. It doesn't steam out because you've heated up the chicken, and the steam then soggifies the coating of the nugget.
Okay, but.
Yeah, go on, come back. You can come back at me with this. I can understand that you may need further clarification.
Yeah, so I'm just sort of trying to figure out how... So say that again? So
You're heating up the microwaves. The microwaves go into the centre of the nugget and heat it from the middle, which then, as the chicken heats, the moisture contained within the chicken meat is turned into steam, which... then makes its way out through the crispy coating. And what happens when the steam meets the crispy coating, Liam?
It gets wet, but...
And then you put it in the oven and everything is heated at the same rate. So the steam eventually would just dry it out. It would never get soggy if you heated it in an oven because the crispy crumb is drying out as everything else does as well.
I'm not sure that I'd follow.
The last bit was weak. The very last bit.
Yeah, I think we need some clarification.
Well, don't know that we do. The central answer to your question is that when you microwave it, the steam emerges from the chicken and soggifies your crispy coating.
We'll wait
for Professor Howell. Probably he'll be able to give us a proper answer on this one. But I'm taking half the round of applause. Mate, stop eating reheated chicken nuggets, will you?
I'll try.
Thank you. It's 12:17.
Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. This is LBC.
20 minutes after 12 is the time, and you're listening to James O'Brien on Mystery Hour. A little bit of housework from yesterday's programme. I've had a wonderful text from Mr. Book's Bookshop, which is in Tunbridge in Kent, saying, did you remember the name of that lovely chap stroke bookshop from yesterday's programme? And this, of course, was the bookshop that sent me, or the proprietor of the bookshop, that sent me a wonderful... graphic novel edition of Robert Trussell's Ragged Trousered philanthropists, which was illustrated by the Rickard sisters, who got in touch on Twitter yesterday. It really is a beautiful, beautiful thing. And it's a great reminder there, Mr. Books Bookshop in Tunbridge in Kent. The bookshop, the proprietor of the bookshop that sent me that free, wonderful, much appreciated edition of the Rickard sisters' wonderful reimagining of the Ragged Trousers Philanthropists, was in fact, it's a bookshop in Tunbridge in Kent called Mr. Books Bookshop. So I'm glad we've cleared that up. 21 minutes after 12 is the time. Sarah is in Holmfirth in West Yorkshire. Sarah, question or answer?
Answer, James.
Carry on.
So it's an answer to the wedding question. As I recall, if somebody objects to the wedding, if it's a legitimate reason that could make the marriage invalid, then you do have to stop and investigate it.
What would that be? What would be a legit, apart from I'm already married to him?
If he thought it was coercion, if he didn't really want to do it.
Oh, you've just sucked all the comedy out of this question, haven't you?
If they were too young, if they're already married.
Yeah.
Sort of like.
It's quite a lot. So it never actually happened to you, but you did get the training.
I got all the training. It didn't. No, I mean, people sometimes interrupt with stupid things.
Oh, you're joking.
Like,
what, some Herbert thinks he's funny?
Keith would do that. And generally, you just have to sort of say, well, moving on.
Yes, I know that face.
And also in that pause where you're waiting, you have to pause a little bit, waiting for them to say something.
Right.
Everyone coughs. Everyone always coughs. It's just kind of an invitation.
It's so nerve-wracking, isn't it? It's an astonishing thing.
Yeah, so generally, as I recall, then, unless if it's a reason that you think the marriage might not be valid, then you stop
getting invested.
Okay,
and how would you investigate it? I mean, you would actually have to call the wedding off, because you're not going to be able to establish some of those things.
Well, you've looked at all the paperwork. You'd have to see proof, because you've normally looked at all the paperwork to make sure that the marriage is legal before it goes ahead.
I'm going to give you a round of applause, but obviously I'm going to leave the door open for someone who's actually done it.
Well, I was a celebrant for a few years.
No, you're getting a round of applause. You're getting a round of applause because clearly you're correct. But, there is a cherry to pop on the top of this cake, isn't there? And that cherry would be...
Well, when it happened
to me, James, when I was getting married, or when I was conducting a marriage ceremony or bronze medal position, when I was in the congregation and it happened. I'm going to keep the door open for that. But you're right. So you, before doing the ceremony, you would have done your due diligence.
Yes,
absolutely. The only one you wouldn't be able to nail down on the day would probably be the coercion question, wouldn't it?
Possibly, but again, you'd have to get a feel for speak to the bride and groom before the ceremony, so you on their own as well when they're not with their partner to be generally. So you generally get a feeling, but I suppose you'd have to.
That's wonderful. Why did you knock it on the head? I'd have thought business would be booming post lockdown.
Oh, well, you see, I went back to my first love, which was radio.
Oh, fantastic. So you did both. You could do both, couldn't you? You could do ceremonies on the radio.
Maybe.
One of my old producers, a wonderful woman called Lucy, became a humanist celebrant. She went from doing this, from producing this programme, to doing funerals.
I did funerals as well, actually, for a while.
Well, usually you do, don't you? Two sides of the same coin. What do you do in radio, if that's not an inappropriate inquiry?
I used to write radio ads for Heart.
Oh, fantastic! You never worked in this building.
I visited, but I was up in Yorkshire.
Well, come and say hello next time you're in town. Thank you, Sarah.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to be a teacher now, so I'm doing something completely different.
Blimey! Oh God, I won't even need to buy your autobiography now. Would you like a round of applause?
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. You would have got Aurelio to, of course, if it had actually happened to you. That was the kind of the subtext of keeping the door open. 24 minutes after 12 is the time. Alex is in Bradford. Alex, question or answer?
Answer.
Yeah?
To the microwave.
Oh, yes.
Question.
Oh, yeah. I think I covered most of it, but you're welcome to fill in a few of the gaps there, Alex.
All right. You were on the right lines,
really?
But a little bit off
really?
The mark, I think. Let me explain.
Go on, then.
It's the difference between the way the two ovens work, in that the conventional oven works by heating up the air, which then heats up whatever the food stuff is that's within it, whereas the microwave, as you say, works direct, it heats up the food stuff directly, and it's the difference in the air temperature within the oven that causes the difference in the quality, in that... in the conventional oven, the hot air is very hygroscopic. It'll draw the moisture out of the surface of the food. Whereas in the microwave, the reverse happens. The air is cool, and that makes it a lot more humid, and that will actually cause the food will draw the hot food will draw the moisture in the opposite direction.
Soggy nuggets.
Yeah, because whereas you were saying that you heat it up, the stuff in the middle, and the steam comes out.
Yes.
If you just put an ordinary slice of bread, stale bread, say, into a microwave and heat it up, it becomes moist, and that's not the steam coming out because there's no steam to come.
That's the moisture that was already in the atmosphere in the microwave.
That's the moisture out of the air,
yeah.
Because the air, yeah.
Soggy nuggets, then. That's
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Qualifications?
40. Well, newly retired from 48 years of process heating and cooling foodstuff for the food industry.
How newly retired are you?
A week.
So when you retired a week ago, did you think to yourself, I wonder how long it will be before I have to call upon my expertise?
I've been waiting for this question. I listen to you every day, James. I love your programme and I'm a big fan, and I've been waiting for this question to come up for about since the start of COVID.
So finally, there's some soggy nuggets on the horizon. And Alex, yes. Beautifully done and a richly deserved round of applause, Alex. Thank you so much. Lovely
Thank
question
you very
as
much.
Well. No, it was beautiful. I loved it. And I wasn't entirely wrong, but I think it was pretty clear from the fact that I got the giggles while trying to answer the question that wasn't a hill that I was prepared to die on, or indeed a nugget. Emma is in Alfreton. Hello, Emma. Question or answer?
Hi, James. I've got a question.
Fantastic.
I just wondered if there was any evidence that sea air is beneficial for us.
Whoa. Seriously?
Scientific evidence.
No, but that is so weird because I had an exchange with the producer during the Extinction Rebellion conversation, and she said, did you notice a major difference when you got back from North Berwick and you arrived back in London in the air? Because I was by the sea. And I said, yes, I did. But obviously, that's not scientific evidence.
Well, no, but I could understand with London, it's probably more heavily polluted than Derbyshire.
It certainly is. It certainly, well, these days it is. I don't know if it always would have been in the days of the dark satanic mills. But I shall, ozone we're looking for. I mean, probably, yeah, they can. They test air quality. So, but it's the sea. It's not just outside of urban areas, is it? We're actually specifically the seaside. I like it. Have you been on your holidays this year? Did you get away?
Yes. I've just been to Scarborough and Filey.
Oh, gosh, you need to be careful. You might bump into Gavin Williamson.
Hopefully, I passed
cross. I shall find out for you. Does this?
Distance.
That's a yes. Yeah, well, you would.
Because people say the sea air will do you good.
They
Everyone
do.
Say the sea air will do you good.
They
and
do.
I just wondered if
it does.
If it has.
No, well, it's a great question. I presume it does because we've all grown up believing that it does. But of course, that's what old wives' tales can sometimes prove to be, isn't it? So, does the sea air, is the air measurably better by the sea? 0345 606 0973. Soggy nuggets dealt with. Has there been any reduction in the number of calls to gas leak lines as a result of anosmia? People losing their sense of smell during the coronavirus crisis. Where do nits come from? And can a former president run as vice president? And we've done the other one, but there's still room. If you've actually witnessed someone objecting genuinely to a wedding, I just want you to tell me what happened. It's not really a mystery, is it, in the traditional sense of this feature? But we'd love to hear the story. If you can answer any of those questions, or indeed if you have one of your own, then the number you need is 0345 606 0973. 12:30 is the time, and Holly Harris has your headlines.
The Admiral and Mrs. Taylor are relaxing by the lake.
Oh, thanks for the latte.
Just a little thank you for helping with my insurance. I bundled my son's car, my home and my mum's cottage and saved £301.
Yeah, all your family cars and homes protected, even at different addresses.
And everyone gets a discount.
Save up to £301 on your car and home insurance with Admiral Multicover. Rewardingly simple. 10% save versus like-for-like policies November 2020 to April 2021.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
12:34 is the time. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Right, mystery how it continues. I'll run you through the questions still in need of answers shortly, but we'll crack on, I think, for the time being. Stuart is in Barnet. Stuart, question or answer?
It's a question, and good afternoon, James.
Very good afternoon to you.
Well, what it was at home the other day listening to the news about a chap who's the oldest or longest heart transplant person the other day.
Yeah.
It was on the news.
Okay.
Well, we then sat down and discussed amongst ourselves, and, you know, so what if, like, I don't know, you're that sort of age, 16, maybe 70 years old, and then you decide, no, this will never happen. Every single organ in your body was transplanted, your heart, liver, lungs, the whole shebang. Not that would ever happen. What's your life expectancy then? Is it of a 20-year-old or of a 60, 70-year-old?
I think it would be even less than a healthy 60 or 70-year-old who didn't have any transplants. But it would be more than the 60, 70-year-old who needed transplants but didn't get them. Because you know, if you have a transplant, there's all sorts of potential complications and medication and problems and issues of rejection. So I mean, you're thinking of us almost like a regeneration here, aren't you, Stuart?
Yes.
I like it.
Putting all that aside.
All that aside. That's science, that is, mate.
No. Eliminate those.
What? Ignore the science? What are you, some sort of anti-masker?
No, just ignore those negative thoughts, just for a minor.
Negative thoughts.
Know,
go on.
We know that can happen, that there are implications whether your body would or would not accept certain organs from another person. I get all
so
of
if
that.
If you hit the jackpot, hit the transplant jackpot, could you live forever?
Well, not so much forever.
Why not? Because you could just change them again a few years down the line, couldn't you?
Well, skin transplants can be a bit awkward, isn't it? When you're
Not look your best, but inside you're going to be cooking with gas.
Yeah, but that still doesn't answer the question.
No, but I think it does, but in a slightly glib and facetious way.
Yes, I hear
all right,
you
so
say, but
if you replaced all your vital organs at the age of 70 with healthy organs from a 20-year-old, would you live longer than you would have done if you'd hung on to your own organs?
Indeed.
All right, that's quite like that question. You are describing Frankenstein's monster, and it didn't end well for him, but, you know, nonetheless. Well, you're not, are you? Because Frankenstein's monster wasn't sort of... Anyway, speaking of reanimation or regeneration, here's a bit of a controversy. Controversy? It's one of those words. I never know which... How do you pronounce it? How do you pronounce it, Keith? And then I'll do the opposite. Is it controversy or controversy, yeah. So, controversy. Here's a bit... Ed's been in touch with a text that I think is real. And I have to say, it stopped me in my tracks more urgently than any text since the bloke earlier in the programme who said it, that my bigotry was a result of being a Catholic, which is probably the most chucklesome thing that's happened so far this week. Regarding the frozen nuggets, writes Ed, another great trick is to freeze leftover chips from the chip shop. Have you ever heard the like of this before? Then reheat them in an oven at a later date. They taste as good as new, and you can have chip shop chips whenever you want. I, writes Ed, am never going back to standard oven chips again. I call them reanimated chips. This, James, is a total winner of a life hack. What are we thinking? What are we thinking? Yeah. You have chips left over. You'd buy extra if it worked that well, wouldn't you? Like you do with pizza sometimes, because it's so delicious and cold the next day. So buy one, get one free. You're not going to eat two pizzas in one sit. Well, I never. I suppose they're so oily, aren't they? Oven chips are cooked chips. They're part cooked chips. Oh, Ed, I don't know if I'm ever going to try that for myself, but I suspect if Mrs. O'Brien goes away, it's not beyond the realms of possibility. Amanda is in Beckenham. Amanda, question or answer?
Hi there, sir. Question.
Carry on, Amanda.
It's to do with UFC fighting, Ultimate Fighting Champion.
Is this your own question, or is it on behalf of a younger human?
No, it's mine.
All right, I just wondered. No pressure. Sorry, thank you.
How old do I sound?
No, you sound, I don't know, it's possible you could be a mum. I don't know how old you are. I don't want to... Oh, this is... You can't ask a man to ask... A woman can't ask a man how old she sounds. That's right up there with, does my bum look big in this? I'm not getting involved in this exchange any further. crack on with your question, please. Stop trying to trip me up.
Okay. So what I'm curious to know is, how do they measure the statistics...
Yes.
With regards to significant strikes landed, significant strike attempts, because they show you during a live fight, they'll show you the stats of how many strikes have been landed on the head, say the body, the legs.
And you think they're going too fast for any for anyone to have counted it in real time?
100%. Far too fast. Yeah, yeah. Because if it was just, oh, this guy threw 100 punches, fair enough. But how do they then divide it out into what landed, what didn't land, what was an attempt, if it was blocked?
That's actually a really good question.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome.
And here's mine. My question.
Yeah, it's a cracking question. I don't follow the sport, but I know that in some martial arts at the Olympics, they have sensors, and fencing and things as well. They have sensors.
Exactly. So
but it's more that how can you tell? Because it could be like a millimetre away from making contact. And how can they know that that one didn't make contact and the one that went a millimetre further did make contact?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yes. Yeah. So every time I watch it, I'm baffled. I think it's very clever. So I think there must be some kind of technology that can measure it, because it certainly can't be the human eye. It's not possible.
No, and they can't be slowing it down and counting it and then doing it, because the update is live on the screen, is it?
Exactly. Yeah.
Blimey. Yeah. This is a classic mystery, Amanda. Well played.
It is.
Let's try and find out for you. How do they do the hit count on UFC? 0345 606 0973. Is the sea air measurably better than non-sea air? The number remains the same. The crazy gas leaks question, the interesting headlines question, and the can a former president run as vice president? 0345 606 0973. And if you replaced all of the vital organs of a 70-year-old with the incredibly healthy organs of a 20-year-old, would that 70-year-old then live longer than he would have done or she would have done otherwise? Karen, who's going to be able to answer that? Karen is in Brighton. Karen, question or answer?
Hi, James. It's a question.
Yes.
Well, when I was a student, this is a subjective thing, so I don't know if it's applicable. Okay.
Don't worry.
When you get a bottle of wine and it has that indentation at the base of it, which is like an inverted cone.
Yes.
What I heard when I was a student was if you wanted to sort of bluff and try and get a good bottle of wine when you don't know anything about wine.
Oh, yes.
Is that if the indentation is quite deep, the chances are that's quite a good bottle of wine, even if it's a cheapo one.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, but I don't know if I'm the only one who heard that, and I don't know if it's true.
It's a new one on me. I would have thought. I'm just running through my.
I've got a bottle of wine in the fridge, and it's a. It's a Waitrose own sort of like Chenin Blanc.
Oh yeah, very nice.
And it's a pretty much a flinty flat base.
Yes, well, I mean, it may have been true once, but then bottle manufacturing techniques would have changed. I would imagine that making a bottle with the dent, I mean, champagne usually has a dent in the bottom of it, doesn't it? A particularly noticeable one. So I would imagine that those bottles were more expensive than flat bottom bottles, and therefore you wouldn't go to the trouble of using a more expensive bottle unless you were bottling a more expensive wine.
Yeah, I don't understand that.
What?
Sorry.
Well, making a bottle with a dent in the bottom would be more expensive than making a bottom with a bottle with a flat bottom.
But really, old bottles of wine have indentations in them, don't they?
Exactly.
Don't they?
Yes, I think so. Yes, exactly.
Or did they worry about sort of like...
Maybe it was the only way you could make a wine. What is the significance of the what did you call it? A cone? The con...
Yeah, it's like an inverse cone.
No, I know exactly what it is. I know. I can see it. And does it have any bearing at all on the quality of what is in the bottle?
That's right. But I know that obviously some people like Thunderbird and some people don't like Thunderbird.
Nobody likes Thunderbird. You only ever drink Thunderbird if you're 15 years old and desperate to get absolutely slaughtered for the least amount of money, don't you?
I know it's a subjective thing, so...
You mean wine is a subjective thing?
Yes.
Well, no, because we'll just stick the cost on it, won't we? So you say quality, I say cost. So the more it costs, the better quality it is.
I disagree, you see.
Well, you can't disagree.
Well, I do.
But you can't. There's the whole world.
No, because you always see on, like, programmes, you see sort of like, oh, this is a really cheap bottle from Lidl.
Yes.
But it's a great bottle of wine.
Yes, but it's not as great as a really expensive bottle from,
Sotheby's. No, but you're going a bit extreme here.
No, I am, but there's an agreement on the quality of wine. What you're describing is a bargain. You're not describing a refutation of the worldwide recognition of wine quality.
I just want to know if you drew a graph when it had cost. Oh, I know.
Cost to cone. The cost to cone ratio.
Well, I guess.
What do you mean? You guess? It is the cost to cone ratio.
I just want to know if it's basically. actually kind of true.
Right, you're on. I'll find out for you. Before you go, I'm not confident. I'm not confident. I'm not confident. So I'm going to give you some useful information. Do you want to know what the cone is called?
Well, OK, yes, oh, yes, 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 I do. Yes, I love that, yeah.
I thought you might, you see. There you go. Ready?
Yeah.
Punt.
Ooh.
It's called a punt.
And how would you use that in a sentence?
Well, I've had a couple of suggestions from people, but I'm not reading them out on the radio.
OK. All right, well, I hope somebody can tell me if I was...
Does the size of the punt impact upon the quality of the wine? The depth of the punt?
Yeah. That sounds like a good question.
The depth of the pub. We got there in the end, Karen. Thank you for all your help and support.
Okay.
Mind, there you go.
Bye-bye.
No, thank you. 12:45 is the time. Does the size of the pub... That you nearly got me into so much trouble then, whoever sent that text. It would not have been easily overlooked. And yes, you did all hear Keith muttering the word organs in my ear. I told you I haven't got the hang of the volume on my headphones yet, but I will one day. 12:45 is the time. Does the depth of the punt reflect the quality of the wine? That's quite a poetic question in the end.
The Admiral and Mrs. Taylor are relaxing by the lake.
Oh, thanks for the latte.
Just a little thank you for helping with my insurance. I bundled my son's car, my home and my mum's cottage and saved £301.
Yeah, all your family cars and homes protected, even at different addresses.
And everyone gets a discount.
Save up to £301 on your car and home insurance with Admiral Multicover. Rewardingly simple. 10% save versus like-for-like policies November 2020 to April 2021.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973.
12:49 is the time. Astonishing descriptions of the Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab in The Economist today. I'm going to tweet it, actually. If you follow at Mr. James OB, then have a look at that. That's incredible stuff. And those of you familiar with what I think might have been my most successful clip of all time, notable chiefly for the fact that while I play a succession of clips of Dominic Raab being Dominic Raab, Theo Usherwood can occasionally be glimpsed in the background in the studio, apparently playing Candy Crush on his phone, which is great, you know. It's like the slave accompanying the victorious general back into ancient Rome, whispering, "You two are mortal," in his ear as a way of keeping his ego in check. It's just back to Mystery House. Steve's in Marlborough. Steve, question or answer?
I've got an answer, James.
Carry on, Steve.
The organ transplant thing,
oh, yes.
You were saying about replacing everyone's all their organs.
Yes.
The chances are they wouldn't live anywhere near as long as they would in natural life.
That's what I thought.
So immunity suppressants we take, we all take their...
You've had a transplant, have you?
Yeah. I had a kidney transplant in 2010.
Fantastic. This is slightly uncomfortable for me because, the questioner insisted that we ignore all of that and speak entirely theoretically. I'm not quite sure what he meant, Steve.
Okay, so I can caveat some of my knowledge.
Go on.
So I work for a few charities. We've spoken before. I was mentoring people during lockdown.
We
with
have.
Youngsters.
Yes, of course.
But anyway, I spend a lot of time around senior transplant physicians, surgeons, consultants, professors in the charities I work with.
Yeah.
And little known fact: there are people walking around at the moment that have had PAC transplants. So they might have had everything from their lungs down, so pancreas, liver, small bowel, large bowel, bladder and kidneys.
Wow.
People that have been very ill and had a PAC transplant. The danger with PAC transplants is, the danger from an organ transplant is your body rejects the organ. That's what happens after time. That's why we take immunity suppressants, and it makes you very ill. With a PAC transplant, the PAC can reject the body.
Oh, Lord,
that's
really?
That's a whole new ball game.
Oh, crikey.
So it's, of course, immunity suppressants mean we're subject to COVID. That can be dangerous. The flu can be dangerous for us. So you're taking away somebody's natural health and immunity as soon as you replace all those organs and put them on immunity suppressants.
And that is going to compromise or affect quite profoundly their longevity. So it's a brilliant answer, Steve. Are you, because I know you do a lot of fundraising as well. Have you got anything on the horizon at the moment?
Well, I haven't got anything active, James. I'm cycling to Paris next year. I will speak to you and get you to bang my drum.
That's the spirit.
Pardon the expression.
No, you could tell I was about to offer. So that is absolutely essential that you do that. Let me know nearer the time and we can give the tin a rattle to mix our metaphors. In the meantime, here's a round of applause. Top man, Steve. Thank you, mate. 12:52 is the time. Andy's in Norfolk. That's not very specific. Whereabouts in Norfolk are you, Andy?
I'm in Thetford, mate. I'm in Thetford.
Thetford, okay. Question or answer?
It's an answer.
Yes.
But I'm going to caveat this with the fact that there was a little bit of Google involved, but I did. I went down the rabbit hole with this one.
Whoa. You're not allowed to Google anything.
No, but this was about 4 or 5 weeks ago.
Oh, that's fine. No, that's allowed. It's only you're not allowed to Google after the question has been asked.
No. That's fine.
All right.
Myself and my wife are into a Netflix show called Designated Survivor, which is about the American presidency.
Yes.
So the question was, can a president serve effectively more than two terms if they're voted through by a vice presidency?
Yeah.
There is an amendment in the Constitution, I think it's the 22nd or 23rd Amendment, I believe it is, which states that they can only be elected to the position of president for two terms.
Oh, so you could.
So technically, they
but
could.
So you could run as vice president and succeed an elected president, and that wouldn't put... So you wouldn't be able to run again, but you could see out that term. Has it ever happened?
I don't believe so, because this only came in like the 1940s, 1950s.
After
FDR.
That's
right, yeah.
Because I think he was in his fourth term when he died, wasn't he? Or something like that.
I think he served four terms, yeah.
He served three, I think, and fell off his perch in the fourth. I'm not sure, but it doesn't matter. That's
something like that, yeah.
No,
that,
nicely done. Is it good, Designated Survivor?
The first two series are fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. I recommend it enough.
Last time I plugged a TV show on the programme, ITV ended up getting in touch, offering both of the two stars of it, Juliet Aubrey and Ben Miller, the stars of Professor Q, which is just one of the best things ever. My latest enthusiasm, I don't know if you've seen this, do you remember The Equalizer? How old are you?
I'm in my late 40s.
Perfect, same as
me. Remember The Equalizer.
Yeah, with Edward Woodward.
Edward Woodward.
Yeah.
Yep.
Do you know they've remade it?
Isn't it a lady or something?
Yeah, it's not just a lady, mate. It's Queen Latifah.
Is it really?
They have remade The Equalizer with Queen Latifah. And I'm telling you now, it is one of the best things I have ever seen on television.
I'm watching that one tonight.
Get on it now. Get on it tonight. Seriously.
I'll tweet you later.
Let me know. I love it. And a round of applause for the President's answer as well. It's all going on.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I'd forgotten to mention that before I went on holiday. It was one of the best things about getting back was I had two or three backed up on the old Skybox. Tim's in Colchester, which means it will be the wine question that is about to be answered.
Hello, James.
Hello.
Yeah, very, very good. Yes, you remember that.
It's been a while, but you know me, I've got a memory like a steel trap. What is it then? Talk to me about punts.
yes. So you're absolutely right that the indentation at the bottom of the bottle is called the punt. There isn't a direct correlation between the depth of the punt and the quality of the wine in bottle. It's one of those sort of slightly urban legends, a bit like the teaspoon in the top of the champagne bottle and all of that sort of thing. There is a sort of a valid reason that a more expensive bottle of wine will have a deeper punt, because what the punt gives you is a greater surface area of glass at the bottom of the bottle, which actually helps the spectral integrity of the bottle. If you really want to sort of reinforce the structural integrity of your bottle, you can do one of two things. You can either have a really thick base, and Louis Roederer Cristal Champagne, for example,
it has a flat bottom, but a very thick base. Yes, it does.
Very, very thick base, yeah. But most producers go the other way, because you can have a deeper punt, but you can actually have a slightly lighter bottle. And again, this is one of the big things at the moment, because heavy bottles mean, obviously, you're using more glass, which is environmentally unfriendly, and a heavier bottle costs more to transport it, which is also environmentally unfriendly.
Beautifully done. Qualifications?
I'm a wine and spirit certified educator.
I can't say fairer than that. Round of applause for Tim, please.
Thank you very much.
No, thank you very much. 12:56 is the time. Daniel's in Newcastle. Daniel, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on, Daniel.
It's the UFC answer.
Yes.
Sorry, question. So it is literally done by eye. You've got three judges on ringside. They've all got monitors.
With different parts of the body.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're all looking at different. One's looking at head. One's looking at body. One's looking at legs. They all because it can possibly go to a judge's scorecard.
Oh, okay.
So. So let's say we're having a fight. Two individuals are having a fight. one chap throws 100 punches and only 50 of them land, then he'll be scored on that 50. But there's obviously, he's thrown 100% of strikes, but only 50% of them have landed. So that...
They'll look at the percentages in the event of a tie or something like that. So they're just trusting their eyes to see whether it's made contact or not, because that was the question, wasn't it? How do they know? It's not scientific, but it's reliable.
No, and it'd be good if the gloves did have sensors, but then you'd be potentially getting scored on you hitting an arm, whereas that's less effective than if you hit somebody in the face.
Got you. So they're watching it closely and pressing little buttons as they see what they see, I presume.
I think the scorecards are marked physically. I think they literally write it down. There's nothing pressed.
Hang on. We've got our own rumble unfolding here. Chris, stay there, Daniel. Christian's in Manchester. Go on, Christian.
So how it works is that there are judges, but their job is to just strictly judge the fight. They actually have separate employees that count what they do. What they've done, is they've hired three employees from a company called Fight Metric.
I don't think you're refuting what Daniel said. Daniel, you've just got the judges mixed up with the other three, but you're both saying there are three people whose job it is to count the hits.
Yes. I think he said that the judge's job is to count the strikes, but it's not their job.
Three people there to count the strikes, and the judges are looking at different things.
There's three judges and another two or three employees that count the strikes, but the judges just strictly judge.
Qualifications, Christian? Qualifications? No? Go on. How do you know this? You don't have to tell me. How do you know the answer to this question?
Are you talking to me?
Yes. Your name's Christian, isn't it?
I have an unhealthy obsession with fight sports.
Daniel, your qualifications?
Similar, but I've just started kickboxing as well.
You win.
Right. See the UFC fighter.
You'll have to share the round of applause. Yeah. Thank you, Jack. Thank you, gentlemen. Lovely stuff. That's it from me for another day. What a wonderful mystery. Nice to be back. We'll do it all again tomorrow morning from 10, shall we? But possibly slightly less conversation about school stationery. I don't know. Depends. I'm just here to please. The next voice you will hear on LBC belongs to Juliet Chingham.